Yes, it's that time. We're into the bad Star Trek era.
Well, okay. Just to be fair, just to show people, I could have opened... Well, we'll get to that in a minute.
Can we do the Adam and Eve promo first?
Sure, go right ahead.
All right. Before we get into the bad Star Treks, for the end of Star Trek month, go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC, and buy some good Star Trek porn DVDs.
Yeah,
they've got them there. You know, adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC. You get 50% off a single item.
Yep.
You get free shipping.
Yep.
Three free.
See, told you it wasn't easy to say.
I know. Three free fuck DVDs and a free special gift. Use the promo code STATIC, adamandeve.com. Really, it's win-win. And
you get some fun for you. You help us out at the same time.
And since tonight's topic is not going to be the fun stuff, you might as well go get something to stick up.
Before we start making fun of this series, now that we've gotten Adam and Eve out of the way.
You really want to play that?
Now, mind you, I went on YouTube and I just looked for Star Trek Voyager opening. And I thought, okay. And I found this wonderful, wonderful piece of work.
Helps if you turn it up.
Well, yeah, I plan on it. But here, we'll let it load for a moment because it's being stupid again. Here it goes. So, and I found this. And I knew right away, that's not right.
Right.
And then this happened. Drop the drum beat.
He was actually bopping and doing the fake drums with his hands and everything.
Because this is just like, it's kind of like if a Mannheim Steamroller knockoff got a hold of Star Trek Voyager.
Along with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
No, TSO is better than this.
Okay. All right, can we pod this shit down?
Okay.
All the way?
The epic little drum.
You're really trying to avoid these last two parts of Star Trek month, aren't you?
I really am. I hated these shows so much.
All right. Now, Voyager, we need to tell people this was UPN. You gotta remember that's the Paramount Network, so it's the same as Paramount.
United Paramount Network.
Their attempt to make a network flag of Star Trek, because this was the flagship show of UPN. Okay, we can't not talk about UPN with these next two shows. This was the launch of UPN, the first thing on their new channel, and this was supposed to be their new flagship show. That, you know, Star Trek, you can't lose with Star Trek.
That's true. It's got a built-in fan base.
Up to this point, they would have been right.
That's right.
Problem is, this was bad.
Yeah.
Remember that sense of fun and adventure you liked about Next
Gen? Nothing there.
That's what they tried to do, though. That's why they abandoned them in the Delta Quadrant. You know, no supplies and whatnot, so it is all exploration again.
Yes, and that's what they
wanted was the fun adventure.
It's a beautiful little premise. It really
is. Well, the premise is great. I think the premise could have worked. And honestly, the pilot's pretty good. The pilot episode is pretty decent. It actually is. So don't look at me like that. The pilot's pretty decent.
You're right. The pilot was pretty good because I saw that and I thought. And on top of that, we put a woman in charge of a starship.
On the last one, you had a black guy, so we're getting progressive. Now we get a woman. And
there you go. Female fan base right there.
Okay. Problem is, they screwed up twice with this. Now, most of you know Kate Mulgrew as Catherine Janeway.
Now, before you go any further.
Okay.
I've met Kate Mulgrew.
And?
She's an extremely nice person. She's a good actress if she's given the right role that's written correctly.
Rima Williams, The Adventure Begins. She wasn't bad in that.
And she's a very nice person. I'm not speaking personally against Kate Mulgrew. Just like when I talk about Wesley Crusher, I'm not talking about Will Wheaton. I'm talking about Wesley Crusher, the way the character was written. The way that Janeway was written, she had the emotional... range of a potato.
Well, and that really was the writing, because this is something I told you before we started recording.
Right.
You didn't realize this, that Kate Mulgrew was not the first actress for Janeway. And I'm not just talking about, oh, they cast somebody else and then they you know, eventually chose her. They actually shot scenes with another actress who is actually worse than Kate Mulgrew was as Catherine Janeway.
Now, what's her name?
I know I'm going to butcher it, but it's like Genevieve Boyd, something like that. She was a big actress in the 70s. You might remember her from like Coma, the Michael Crichton movie, like that. We're going to play some clips here. Now, the music's going to be a little overpowering because some fans went and put music underneath this and sound effects, but this is actually Genevieve Boyd's. The couple of scenes she shot before she was unceremoniously walked off the set, and they said, this is not working.
Right.
Or might not leave any debris.
We'd still be able to pick up a resonance trace from the warp core.
Captain, I'm reading a coherent tetraon beam scanning us.
Origin, Mr. Kim.
I'm not sure. There's also a displacement wave moving towards us.
On screen. Analysis.
Some kind of polarized magnetic variation.
We might be able to disperse it with gravity on our field.
Do it. Red alert. Move us away from it, Lieutenant. New heading 41 Mark 180.
Now, obviously, with you people not being able to see this, she is so uninterested in the dialogue she is giving. She does not care at all. First of all, it seems like she's having trouble with the techno babble. Maybe the fact that she's French, she's having issues with all the English techno babble.
And I always thought it was very odd, the fact that for Jean-Luc Picard, an obviously French character raised in the Provence of France, they chose an English Shakespearean actor.
Well, as you were telling me when you were out having a smoke before the show, something about the French, are all they always seem uninterested. So might have been a bad move to get a French actor.
Parisians are always, it's just very disinterested in life
or bathing.
It seems, and I'm not going to take time to rail against the French, but. Yeah, Parisians just always seem disinterested with everything. If you go to thatguywiththeglasses.com and watch a Sad Panda review, that's about as interested as I've ever seen a Parisian.
Well, but like I said, didn't she just seem bored? That she just had no interest?
Back to my original point, I thought it was hilarious the fact that they chose an English Shakespearean-trained actor to play Jean-Luc Picard, a very, very French Frenchman. And here they choose somebody, a Captain Janeway, a very English last name.
And they choose a French person.
And they choose a French woman. And I realized that she was trying to hide her French accent.
It was still pretty pronounced. You but it could was still, hear yes. it.
It's just like watching House and trying, and I hear Hugh Laurie and I go, that's an English accent you're trying to hide. That's an English.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I thought it was very interesting that they chose a French actress, an award-winning actress at that.
Yes.
That, again, in the right part, such as in Coma.
Well, see, I think what Paramount wanted with her was, I think they wanted her award-winning status and her sort of cult status in, you know, movie nerd circles,
right,
to bring people to Star Trek and go, oh, it's given Star Trek legitimacy now. I think that's what Paramount was thinking. On the other hand, with how disinterested she seems, and from an interview I read years later, my supposition, this is just me reading between the lines here, okay? I think this is something her agent got her into. Her agent probably accepted this going, Star Trek, you know, you'll never have to work again after Star Trek. You can make your living off signing conventions and things like that. And I think when she got there, she went, this is not for me. I fucked up. How do I get out of this contract? And the way to do that probably was to just
do
half-ass the performance and then they ask you to leave. Keep in mind, I can't prove any of that. That's supposition on my part. But from what you've seen, am I really that far off?
No.
Because, I mean, if you've ever seen her in a movie, she's never not tried this hard before. You know?
And like you said, the last one that I really remember her from is Coma.
She's been in a bunch of others, but she's been
But nonetheless, and I liked that movie, Coma. It was pretty good.
It wasn't bad. Michael Douglas. But, so, right off the bat, you've got issues with Voyager with the fact that you're changing the main actor. So then you get Kate Mulgrew, who
did the best she could with what she was handed.
The character was really, there was nothing to the character. That, yeah. I think, was the biggest part of the problem.
Exactly. I mean, bless you. Let's take a look at captains in general. First off, we have Kirk in the original series.
Well, first we have Pike.
Fuck Pike. We have Kirk. And I'm dead serious. I don't consider, I mean, yes, first we have Pike, but he was in a pilot.
One episode.
And that's it.
Right.
Long-term Kirk pilots.
Kirk
Star
Captain.
Trek. Kirk Cameron? long-term Trek pilot.
Captains.
Captains, thank you. We start with Kirk, who had this emotional range that was either on
or off.
And that was about it.
Then you've got Picard, who to me was sort of, and I am oversimplifying for the fact of brevity, okay?
Okay.
I think he was an expression of the 80s, that man that pretends to be masculine while still being emotionally open. I mean, he very much was an 80s man
character. But just as a character, I mean, leave the decade out of it. Look at it. He had that very stoic, I am the captain. I have to remain the rock for my crew to stand upon.
Okay.
But we still saw him break down. We saw an emotional range from fear in many cases to crying in others to elation and joy. I mean, we saw a huge emotional range in Picard.
And then we go to Sisko.
And then we go to Sisko. Again, must remain that rock. But we saw anger. We saw vengefulness. We saw this dark captain that we hadn't seen before. But again, an emotional range there. Interacting with Jake, we saw sadness and joy and there.
The baseball, the holodeck. He was a huge American, you know, baseball fan.
Exactly. We saw a beautiful emotional range there, and it was well written. I'm not going to argue with you on that one.
Then you have Janeway.
Then we have Janeway, and the way the character was written in the scripts, we saw, I must be the rock my crew stands upon, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
She faced some amazingly difficult choices throughout Voyager. The very premise of the show, with them being stranded, limited supplies, blah, blah, blah.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Anyway. The very premise of the show means some very difficult choices, and we saw some amazingly difficult choices. The series finale, we saw a chance for Janeway to truly express joy and relief in a way that was even more so of an opportunity.
The writers dodged around it,
and yeah, we the writing didn't allow it. So, again, this is not a knock on Mulgrew's acting in any way, shape, or form.
Well, you know, and then you have all these possibilities with the cast of Voyager. Whereas, like we mentioned last week, half the crew is actually criminals.
Right.
You know, because half the crew of the Maquis ship that they're chasing when they get pulled into the Delta Quadrant and half the crew of Voyager end up getting killed, so they have to combine the crews.
Exactly.
So you've got all these great possibilities. Basically criminals working alongside the cops that were trying to catch them.
Exactly.
Does that ever get brought up again? No.
And if you want that stone-faced, emotionless character, you had Seven of Nine, which
later, which
did that very well.
Except then they pulled a Data on her.
They pulled
give her emotions.
Exactly. But
and boobs.
And for some reason they gave her more emotions and more boobs than Janeway.
Yeah.
And just like a real starship or a real ocean-going ship, I think that the strength of the crew lies in many cases in the captain.
I can see that.
And I think the same is true with Trek. And
bad captain.
We didn't have a good, well-written captain in Janeway.
Right. And part of the problem is, like we brought up the supplies. part of the point of stranding Voyager in the Delta Quadrant was to open up that exploration again and sort of bring in a little bit of the darkness of Deep Space Nine by the fact that they can't resupply. They can't get new materials to repair the ship. They can't get new photon torpedoes. They can't replenish shuttlecrafts that die. They can't have new crew members transfer on board, things like that. And I thought, oh, great. At the end of the pilot, they actually give the number. I think it's like we have like 6 photons left, 3 shuttlecrafts, something like that, and yeah, so many crew
brilliant
members.
Premise.
And you go, yes. Know.
And that way, if they had stuck to that, if you see in a promo when they only have 6 photon torpedoes left
and
they shoot
one,
that something big is fucking happening and I'm going to watch that episode.
Right. So what happens by the end of the first season? They've already used 3 times more photons than they had. By the end of the second season, they've already blown up more shuttlecrafts than they had. And by the end of the series, they've already killed the entire crew number-wise.
Plus some.
Because no one paid attention. There was no continuity in this show of, well, we have 6 photons. We used 3 in the last episode. So you can't use 4 in this one because you don't have them.
And what I think... what I think would have worked well. Did you ever see Apollo 13?
The Bill Paxton, mm-hmm. Tom Cruise movie? Yes.
When the scientists wanted to come up with a solution for basically filtering out the carbon monoxide.
Okay.
Or dioxide, whichever one it was.
The carbon.
The carbon. Basically, they locked them in a room with what was available on the ship and said, here's your shit. Come up with a solution.
Right, which is the way NASA actually works.
And this is what I think they should have done with the writers of Voyager. Here's your shit as we use it through the series.
But see, right there, you're stepping into your own plot hole. They writers. Voyager was the first Star Trek to take unsolicited scripts. So you had people that didn't know, like people who had only seen what had been on the air. They didn't know what the next 16 scripts that had already been written were, and they wrote a script that required them to fight, you know, to fire 17 photons. And they would do that. The scripts were basically written so out of order that there was no way any sense of continuity could be kept. That was part of the problem.
Yeah.
There were too many writers. Because if you look at the credits on Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, you'll notice the same maybe 10 names, mm-hmm. throughout the, mm-hmm. entire series. You look at Voyager's writing credits, you'll notice 100 different names.
Exactly. And they took unsolicited fan scripts and
obviously rewrote them, you know, to their needs, but basically
tweaked them, yes. But basically, it was the first Star Trek series to air fan fiction, which
is a mistake yeah, right there.
Yeah, never, ever, ever, ever leave your writing to your fans.
I mean, I even have the issue of Star Trek Communicator where it said, tips on getting your script for a Voyager picked up.
Yes.
You know, here's what to do, here's what not to do. And it's like, you shouldn't be telling me that.
Right.
I shouldn't need to know that because I shouldn't be able to write for Voyager if I'm not a professional writer. And that was part of their problem.
Exactly.
The other problem was a little bit was UPN. For whatever reason, UPN decided to air a couple of the episodes out of order. So some of the continuity issues, maybe when you see them in order, make a little bit more sense. But UPN also demanded that every season finale / season premiere be a two-parter.
Yep.
That the season finale ends on a big cliffhanger that we resolve in the second half, which is the season premiere. That's really annoying. It's actually not as bad when you watch them on DVD because you can watch the whole 90 minutes at once. Because they had one great one, the Captain. Any fan will know the Captain Ransom story. That was a great one where you find out Voyager wasn't the first ship pulled in.
Right.
And another ship. But Voyager was made for deep space exploration. This first ship was a science vessel. Didn't have any photons, had limited phasers, and could only go warp 4. So their crew, who had been in the Delta Quadrant longer, had a much, much tougher time.
Right.
And they got desperate, and they found these little ghosty creatures that if you shove them in the warp core, you get a boost out of it. So they were murdering an entire race to get home sooner, and that didn't sit too well with Janeway. So the Captain Ransom story. And again, great possibility for stories. Most of her crew ended up being, or Captain Ransom's crew ended up being rescued at the end, and they got on Voyager, and she gives them this big speech about, you know, we can't trust you, you've turned your back on the Prime Directive, you've committed crimes which you will be held accountable for, you will be watched at all times.
beautiful chance to explore those characters and
those characters like never that. Appeared again and on the show, boom, not even in gone. Dialogue.
Right. They were just kind of
well, part of the problem might have been they backed themselves into a corner. All the characters that survived were played by notable character actors. So the chances of getting those actors back was probably going to be slim to none. Which is that I suspect is why you never saw those characters again, because they had trouble getting the actors again, which was kind of a mistake that the producers made initially. But that would have been a great storyline to have explored all those.
Right.
And no, we're not going. And they also had the weird desire. We always got to get the doctor. You know, the doctor being locked into the sick bay. We got to find a way to get him out. So they gave him that goddamn portable holographic emitter so he could walk around the ship and go on away missions and stuff. And you go, okay, so he's just like every other doctor in Star Trek now. Yeah, you've lost what made him a unique character. So what way to go, writers, you fucking morons.
Yeah.
And Voyager just, it was not a good show. And then when they brought in the Borg were supposed to be the ratings godsend. And it was for a while. But if you go back to Next Generation, remember that these are the Borgs that Hugh infected.
Mm-hmm.
And they have personality. And I'm sorry, but those Borgs are terrible. That's not the Borg to me. That's just another alien race.
Okay.
The Borg are the emotionless, insect-like, unstoppable creatures. That to me is the Borg. That's not the Borg we got.
That's true.
And so, unfortunately, they chose the pussified Borg. And I have issues with that. Then at the same time, you've got interesting characters like Seska. She was a Maquis, but she was actually a Cardassian who was genetically altered to look like a Bajoran because she was infiltrating the Maquis. If you go back to last week, we talked about how the Cardassians
right, whatnot.
Great thing for a character. So what do? They immediately kick her off Voyager and she joins up with the Kazon, the sort of dollar store Klingons of the Delta Quadrant. And also, this always bothered me. Okay, Voyager is the fastest ship in the Delta Quadrant, okay? They've already established that. That's why all the other races want to get Voyager, because they do not have warp technology, okay?
Right, right.
So they encounter the Kazon, let's say, at point A. You're going to have to visualize this as a straight line, okay? At point A, they encounter the Kazon.
Okay.
Now, they go directly north at warp speed, faster than the Kazon can follow them. And they go like that for 3 or 4 days. So what do they run into? The same Kazon characters they left behind. How were the Kazon always in front of them if they could not travel as fast as them? That's bad writing.
Yeah, and that's what killed this series, was the bad writing. They didn't have bad actors. They didn't have bad characters, at least premise-wise, good start. They didn't have bad characters at all. What they had was bad writing.
And it got worse.
Yeah.
Once UPN picked up the WWF, or maybe they were the WWE at that point.
They were the WWE at that point.
Well, they picked up WWE SmackDown or whatever. I don't watch that shit. Well, they decided, what better way to cross-promote? We'll have wrestlers in an entire season of Star Trek. So there was an entire season of Star Trek where every single guest star was a wrestler. Oh. You had The Rock and China and all this crap. And
by the way, I did get a fan request and I was paying attention. That's one thing that they wanted us to cover was wrestling.
Wrestling.
The only problem is neither Josh nor I are real fans, and neither one of us know enough about the world.
I could not name a current WWE wrestler. Yeah,
me either. But we don't know enough to do a wrestling show. I realize there are some rabid fans out there, and good on you if that's your thing. It's not ours, so it wouldn't be fair for us to try and cover it. Anyway, so we had these wrestlers.
So they had that great idea that and it wasn't just with Star Trek, because if you looked at all the other shows UPN was doing at the time, they all had wrestlers forced on them on their guest stars. For some reason, Paramount made the decision wrestling will be cross-promoted to everything because we want wrestling fans to watch shows like The Strip and Star Trek and that.
Right.
and none of them turned out good. They're all really bad episodes. I mean, you've got Seven of Nine fighting The Rock, and you go, It's still not as bad as, I think it was the season 2 premiere of Voyager. Maybe I might be wrong on that, where we find out that the dinosaurs didn't go extinct. They evolved and got starships and went off and colonized other planets. That's actually when I gave up on Voyager. I said, that's it. I'm not doing this anymore. I can't.
Yeah.
And then later, they got so desperate for ratings, Troy and Barclay became semi-regulars and appeared in multiple episodes of Voyager.
And once again, we know it's Barclay, not Berkeley.
Yes.
Sorry.
Berkeley's a college.
Exactly.
You know, and it was just, it was another just blatant, you know, we really, really want ratings.
Yeah.
And then they've got the Sulu episode where you find out that Tuvok was on board the Excelsior during Star Trek VI.
Mm-hmm.
So you got George Takei coming back and...
George Takei,
whatever. And it just, everything Voyager seemed to do seemed like a ratings grab. When DS9 would do that, it seemed natural. Like the Trials and Tribulations episode for the Star Trek's 25th anniversary.
Fit the writing.
Yes.
The writing. Voyager never, there were so many different writers and they were taking fan-based scripts and stuff like that. It never solidified into a decent writing style.
Right, and it was erratic. Now, I understand, obviously, with a cast as large as you've got, you're going to have issues with some characters are going to get more preferential treatment in some episodes, and others are just basically going to be there. The problem was you saw certain characters that always, for some reason, the B'Elanna Torres-Tom Paris romance took center stage, and I'm sorry, that's probably the blandest romance in all of Star Trek. And
right up there with Riker and Troy.
Right. I mean, to me, the only romance, the ongoing romance in Star Trek that, I mean, I even had problems with Cassidy Yates and Ben Sisko, and that was the O'Briens. That was the only romance, and you know what is the weird thing? They were the only ones that were married.
Yeah.
But the O'Briens, Miles and Keiko O'Brien, they acted like a real couple, and yes, they weren't annoying as a couple.
Agreed.
Is that weird? And yet they were background characters on Next Generation,
but
until they moved to DS9.
But it worked amazingly well.
Right. Now, unfortunately, we have to go to the one Scott and I have been really, really dreading.
It's my favorite Star Trek series to poop on.
Just play the open. It's been a long, long. And no, we're not playing like some lame Rod Stewart AM radio shit. This is Enterprise. It's been a long time. My time is fine. I will see my dreams. Scott, does this make you think of Star Trek? I will touch the
sky. No.
Or does this make you think you've somehow hit the easy listening station on your AM dial? All right, kill it.
Yeah, I mean, just based on the themes alone, you can start playing the which one of these things is not like the other theme, because this ain't Star Trek, and that's exactly... I was watching Enterprise, because we were excited. We're like,
oh,
okay,
yeah.
Voyager sucked, DS9 wasn't our thing, maybe this one will be good. And so I sat down with Melissa, and I sat down with a couple other people, and we were like, all right, we can check this out. And then that played, and we were like, no. So, yeah, I mean, from the opening theme, we were just like, what?
Something's
what
wrong.
What the fuck is this? Something is wrong.
I remember when the night this premiered, everyone was, I mean, literally, the internet was exploding with,
oh, yeah,
what the hell was that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then what you got to realize, Scott and I will talk about this more in literally a minute. Listen, this is the original promo used to sell the series to fans. You people out there, tell me what's wrong with this.
This is what got me excited, was the first 30 seconds of this promo.
And then the second 30 seconds is what we'll talk about.
Yeah, okay.
For decades, we've dreamed of traveling beyond our solar system. This fall, we will...
Today, we are about to cross a new threshold.
Witness the beginning of the Star Trek saga.
Starfleet seems to think that we're ready to begin our mission.
Don't screw this up.
The first captain.
Request permission to get underway.
Take her out, Mr. Mayweather.
The first crew.
They have two settings, stun and kill. It would be best not to confuse them.
The first trek into the final frontier.
Neptune and back in 6 minutes.
Here we go. Here. We didn't add that. Nope.
Just a little trouble with the bad guys.
You might think about recommending seatbelts when we get home.
A new era of discovery is about to begin.
Let's go.
Enterprise launches Wednesday, September 26th on UPN.
All right, a couple of problems.
For decades.
Oh, stop. Don't play it again.
I'm not going to play that again. Sorry.
But so do you see what I was talking about? How does that make you think Star Trek? If I could, 30, I would.
The first 30 seconds did.
Yes. But I'm talking about the music.
No, but you got to remember also that music fit in beautifully with the rest of UPN's promos.
Which is the problem. UPN, you'll notice the other problem. Did you notice it wasn't called Star Trek Enterprise?
Just Enterprise.
Because
launches this fall.
Yeah, UPN had this weird ideal that Star Trek is for nerds. And we're doing, this is a quote. We want to do Star Trek that's not Star Trek. So in other words, they wanted people who were Trekkies to watch this.
Yes.
And they wanted to get the people who were scared off by the stigma of what Star Trek was. They wanted to watch this. So they were selling this as, if you're not a Trekkie, you'll still like this. And that, to me, is not only disingenuous to you and I as a viewer, that's disingenuous to everybody and to the franchise itself.
Exactly.
You know, and then using that lame opening theme, and then the if I could, I would. I don't know who the hell does that. But, you know, to use that, they were trying to sell this to teenagers who don't watch Star Trek.
Exactly.
That was the main problem with this. And then they went out of their way in the series to avoid continuity, at least in the first couple of seasons. I've outright said season 4, too much damage had been done for it to work, but season 4 tried. Season 4 really did try. When they hired Manny Coto to take over the show, he really tried to fix Enterprise, and there were 4 really terrific episodes in season 4. And both of them were two-parters, and it was just too little too late.
Well, maybe I wouldn't mind going back. If I'm guessing you've got tape of that somewhere.
Yes. And the ones I'm talking about for fans would be the In the Mirror Darkly and the two-parter with Peter Weller as a racist.
See, again, I'll probably go back and I'll give those a try on your recommendation.
Well, and the beautiful thing about In a Mirror Darkly is it actually ties into classic Star Trek, literally. Remember the classic Star Trek episode we talked about, the Tholian web?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no relation to Deep Space Nine. The Enterprise's sister ship there was called the Defiant, and it ended up vanishing. I mean, literally, it got pulled into a space-time continuum thing, okay? And you never found out what happened to it, and the crew ended up dying. It went into the past in the Mirror Universe. They find the USS Defiant 200 years before that technology would exist. That's why when Spock and Kirk and them enter the Mirror Universe, everything is designed the same as regular Star Trek, because they actually used the USS Defiant as the basis. It actually cleans up all that plot hole of why does the Mirror Universe look the same if everything evolved differently.
Well, there you go.
And the only time the Tholians were ever brought back and the Gorn were brought back was in that episode.
Oh, okay.
Remember the Gorn was the green thing that Kirk fought on the planet, the big green lizard alien?
Yes, in that epic and memorable, horribly choreographed fight, yes.
Yes, but the Gorn and the Tholians, their only appearance in any other Trek was in that In a Mirror Darkly. And it was the only time an entire Mirror Universe story was told without any characters from our timeline.
And again, the main problem with Enterprise, great premise.
I didn't even think the premise was very good.
I like the premise. I think it's pretty good. You know, the first Enterprise, let's check this out,
except
see what it's like.
It's more technologically advanced than what the classic Trek.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, if they'd gone back and done like that retro 60s kitsch style.
That's what I'm saying. Look at the premise.
Just the premise.
Just the premise. Good premise. And I like the way that, you know, I wouldn't mind going back and learning about the first Enterprise and the first crew.
Despite the continuity issues of the fact that they outright say Pike was the first captain of the Enterprise. The hell does Archer come into this?
Yeah, I know. But we'll, you know, yes, that was, okay. You're right. It's a terrible premise. It's a terrible premise. It was horrible writing. Bakula played Bakula.
I actually like Scott Bakula as an actor quite a bit. I like Scott Bakula as an actor, but...
But he played Scott Bakula.
Oh, yeah. But I think,
mean, you know, no, he's probably not a bad actor. He's not my cup of tea, but you're right. He's along the lines of Sean Connery where, hello, I'm a Russian submarine commander. And hello, now I'm a Spaniard, teaching a Highlander. Hello, now I'm an Englishman. Hello, I'm a Scotsman.
Well,
you know, and it's, you know.
You also have the big issue with Enterprise was the fact that, keep in mind, each Star Trek that came after Classic had what they called a bridge character. Whereas you had Dr. McCoy appearing in Next Generation's
exactly.
pilot. You had Picard appearing in DS9's pilot. You had Quark appearing in Voyager's pilot.
Yes.
And Odo, but his scenes were cut, but they actually shot a scene with Odo.
Okay.
So who do you get for Enterprise? James Cromwell from First Contact. In a little less than a minute cameo, and you go, okay, that was kind of a weak bridge character. Probably the only one they could have done logically, but you kind of go, that was a weak little guest star character for the pilot.
Yes.
You know, and then, again, to go back to them ignoring continuity, okay, let's say you don't take the stylistic look of the 60s Star Trek, okay?
Okay.
But then the fact that the very first episode deals with the Klingons, with the huge foreheads,
right?
Which Deep Space Nine had already put into continuity the way they looked in Classic Trek.
Right.
They actually looked and they evolved into the new Klingon look.
Yes.
So the fact that they have the big-headed Klingons meant we don't care. We don't care about continuity at
exactly.
all. Exactly. But we don't care. We're not even trying.
Exactly. And that's I don't. I mean, you know.
And then they kept trying to retcon. Did you know the Borg appeared on Enterprise?
Did they really?
Yeah.
No.
Apparently there was a little escape bubble that came out of the Borg ship in First Contact, and they end up finding its remnants during Enterprise, and then the Borg reactivate. And it turns out that whatever the Doctor, John Billingsley's race is immune to Borg probes, so they stick him and he doesn't turn Borg in a nice MacGuffin. His race, the Borg probes won't take. Yeah, wow. That's as bad as it sounds.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I made it halfway through the first season of Enterprise, shut off, and never watched it again.
You made it longer than I did. I only made it 4 episodes before I said I'm done. And then I only came back to season 4 on DVD. I did not watch season 4 I didn't watch any other episode in first run. I went to season 4 on DVD because people had told me that season 4 actually really does try and redeem itself until the finale. Did you ever see the finale?
No, I'm dead serious. I and at the time I was with my friend Melissa, my spunky little redhead, who was even more. She is a true Trekkie.
Okay.
She and her dad used to watch the original series, and then they, you know, and she is a huge Trekker fan, just giant. Yeah, we didn't make it.
Well,
when she shut it off, and I was like, oh, this is bad.
Well, actually, I just lied to you. I did watch that when it first aired. I wanted to see how they tied it up. So I did watch one other episode, original run. That was the most insulting 2 hours I have ever spent. Thankfully, time has been kind to me on this one. I'm not the only one that hates it. Everybody hates that finale. It's insulting. Do you know why it's so insulting?
Why is that? What happened? I have no idea.
It's actually an episode of Next Generation.
What?
They start to tie up all the storylines on Enterprise.
Right.
And hey, guess what? It's Riker and Troy in the second to last episode of Next Generation watching a holodeck vid of the history of the first Enterprise. basically pulling a, hey, the whole series, it was all a holodeck vid Riker and Troy were watching.
Oh my God.
And they actually mention the Pegasus was the second to last episode of Next Generation. So it takes place right before the finale of Next Gen.
Oh my God.
And they got Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis back. And so literally Enterprise's finale is actually
that's worse
Next
than
Generation's
Saint
finale.
That's worse than St. Elsewhere.
I've talked to you. I like that St. Elsewhere ending. You fuck
that. That's
bag.
Worse than... Wow.
So...
That's bad.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Berman and Braga, the writers, they're the guys who drove Star Trek into the ground, okay?
Okay. Because okay.
Michael Piller was in control of DS9, and they were in control of Next Generation and Voyager and Enterprise.
Okay.
Until the fourth season when Manny Koto took over. And then they pretty much left him alone, but they wanted to come back to do the finale because it's their show. They did not understand why people hated that. They actually called that episode a love letter to Star Trek fans, and they did not understand why that episode was so insulting to fans.
Because I don't know about you, but I end every love letter I write ends with
a middle
and
finger.
Fuck you too. Yeah, you know.
Because, I mean, how would you have liked to have watched Next Generation and then to find out that it's all something that Dr. McCoy and Spock are watching on a view screen, that the whole series took place, you know, basically in the memory banks? How would that not have insulted you greatly?
Yeah, either that or just have, you know, William Shatner do a quick cameo of a kind of a wake up of,
that was all a dream.
Yeah, that'd be a shitty future. And then all of a sudden you're back in the classic track. Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah, so this whole love letter to fans thing, I don't buy.
I don't think it was a love letter. It may have been a letter to fans.
But it was more of a stalker letter.
But I would, no, or two letters to fans, F and U.
True. So, all right. Now we've left the shitty ones behind. We've got to talk about the new... Again, we talked about this in our reboot episode a little bit. I don't really consider the Star Trek 2009 a reboot because of the fact of how they did it.
It is a reboot, but it's not a reboot. And it's,
to me, it's actually a spinoff because they left the real timeline intact.
Yeah.
By having old Spock, that's how I'm going to call him, be trapped in this timeline and come from that timeline, they did it brilliantly, actually, yes. Because people didn't want a reboot. People didn't want a spinoff. This way, they got either one that they want.
A little bit of both, yeah.
And that was brilliant. And the lens flares might have been a little over the top, but personally, I kind of liked it.
Okay.
I think the lens flares, like during the action scenes and that, really did add to the action. It really did add to the intensity. During the dialogue scenes, I don't think you needed all the lens flares.
Agreed.
You know, I thought that was a little ridiculous. But you not being a classic Trek fan,
okay.
What did you think of how they did the old characters?
I enjoyed it.
Do you think they did them justice?
I think so. For the most part. I mean, there was a little bit of that movie that was kind of ridiculous, and there were some
plot holes.
Yeah, pretty big plot holes and stuff like that. But at the same time, they kind of did him justice. I always wondered what happened to the car that Kirk was driving at the very beginning.
It plummeted. It probably blowed up.
Yeah, it probably blowed up. What was at the bottom of that canyon?
The car after it was done.
Yeah, and what else? Because you go to the Grand Canyon, and it's not just the bottom of the canyon at the canyon.
Was that supposed to be the Grand Canyon? I don't think they ever said that was the Grand Canyon.
Well, no, I don't know, but I'm using this as an example. Okay. It's a national park, so you've got rangers and tourists and all kinds of stuff down there like mad. And here comes this car, this Mustang, just plummeting off.
Well, let's see. He's from Idaho.
Iowa.
Iowa, sorry. He's from Iowa, so I don't think Grand Canyon...
No, that wasn't the Grand Canyon. And in fact, I can tell you there's no canyon like that in Iowa.
Yeah, but this is in the future. Maybe something happened. It's a meteor hit or something.
California fell off. you know, but nonetheless, I think they did, you know, aside from the plot holes, aside from the, hey, look at me, lens flary special CGE kind of stuff.
CGE? CGE. Computer-generated image?
No. No. CGIE, then, in which case,
okay.
E as in, never mind. aside from that kind of stuff, I thought that they did them pretty decent justice.
To me, the one that they nailed, and Carl Urban was absolutely perfect as Dr. McCoy.
Yes.
He got the mannerisms, the speech pattern.
Yes.
The little body movements. Yes. He embodied DeForest Kelly.
I think they improved Kirk somewhat.
He wasn't as douchebaggery.
He wasn't as douchebaggy. I think that Spock, they kind of
made him more of an asshole. Yeah. I think that Spock was never that much of an asshole. Yeah,
they kind of missed the mark with him. Bones, you're right. They nailed Scotty.
I think they made him a little too jokey, a little too smartassy.
Yeah,
Scotty was never really
Scotty was still a Scotsman, and there aren't very, Craig Ferguson, Scotsman with a great sense of humor. Give me three more examples.
Sean Connery.
No. Scotsman with a great sense of humor. Sean Connery does not have a great sense of humor. He has one, but, it's just not in the Scottish nature to be that kind of pranky, jokey type.
Okay. Well, and one of the problems I had was basically Sulu and Chekhov fell into the same trap that they did in the movies, in the classic Trek.
They played a race, not a character.
Yeah, and they were barely there.
Right.
I mean, you could have replaced either one of them with nameless actor number four, yes, and it would have been the same performance.
Yes, I agree.
So to me, and Uhura is the one I really don't like what they did. I don't like the whole love affair that was hinted at with her and Spock. I don't like them really sexualizing her to make her, I mean, she was almost trying to use her sexiness to get ahead. And that's
That's where they missed the mark with Spock. Yes, he's half human, but he does everything he can to deny that human half for a good chunk of the series.
Yes.
And for him to have a love affair? No.
Well, and then this is something that the advertising pissed me off with. Okay, in classic, you always, who are the three classic Trek characters you think of? Kirk, Spock, McCoy.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So they started releasing the teaser posters. Kirk and Spock and Uhura.
Yeah.
Because she was the black one and they wanted to be racially sensitive.
Yes.
So we can't leave the black character.
Right.
Dr. McCoy was barely in any of the advertising, even though
he played a huge role. And yes.
Yeah. And it was like, I'm not saying Uhura shouldn't be on there, but I'm saying she should not be before Dr. McCoy.
Agreed.
Because his character was far, far more important to the series.
I agree. Well,
and the same thing, almost the opposite, happened when they were launching Enterprise. Some of the early Enterprise promos were Captain Kirk, Captain Picard, Captain Janeway, and now Captain Archer. Do you notice a missing name there?
Sisko.
Yeah. Do you notice that those old promos, they don't even mention Sisko? And you know what Paramount's excuse was to that criticism?
We forgot. Well,
he only became a captain halfway through the series. He was only a commander before. We wanted to focus on the captains. Oh, yeah, it didn't happen to be the one Star Trek you want to distance yourself from and the fact that it's a black dude.
Right.
Right? No, that played nothing into that, did it?
And this is one thing that I'm glad that they didn't do with the 2009 Star Trek was, think of a TV gang, typical TV gang. And
like a street gang?
Yeah. Family Guy has made fun of this. Oh, my God, look, it's a typical
multicultural
TV gang, complete with white guys.
It's the same thing that American Akira movie they're making.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen Akira, right?
Yes.
All Asians, right?
Distinctly Japanese.
Well, in this one, they've got a black guy,
yeah,
they got a white guy,
yeah,
and they got an Asian guy, yeah, and they got a Latino in the gang, yeah, and you got to multiculture it up.
And I realize that we kind of already have the multiculture because we had Uhura, we have Scotty, we have
Chekhov and Sulu,
but and I guess Vulcan. We have Spock. I realize that it's already kind of there, but they didn't play that up as in, my God, look at how sensitive and PC we're being.
Yeah. Look, and there's a black guy, and look, there's a Russian, and look, there's an Asian.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm thankful for that.
And just the fact that the movie was actually really good. I'd be lying to you if I said I went into it with high expectations.
Oh, I went in with no expectations whatsoever.
I went in wanting to hate it. I really did. I went in going, I don't like the trailer. I don't like the fact that they are really... The trailers made this look like a Captain Kirk movie
mm-hmm.
that the other characters happened to be in. Because this looked like a Kirk movie. Because he was the star of all the trailers.
Right, right.
And he was the star of the promotional tie-ins and everything.
Right.
So to me, oh, great, a Captain Kirk movie. And I went in wanting to hate it. And I went out going, that was pretty fucking good.
Yep.
And that really bowled me over, the fact that it was pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Did you see that one in the theater?
Yes, I did.
Saw that in a midnight screening. That was really cool to see that in a midnight screening. And my wife's a Trekkie also. She only likes Deep Space Nine. She doesn't even like classic Trek, but she went with me and she liked it.
So are you looking forward to the next one?
That depends. I've heard that the writers are the guys that wrote Transformers 2 and 3. So that
those were cinematic masterpieces.
So to me, that's not a good sign if those guys are... Keep in mind, that's only what I've heard. I don't know who's actually writing it. But if that's true, that's not a good sign for a good movie. I would hope J.J. Abrams kind of rewrites the script then if that happens.
Okay, we've got a little bit of time left here. What are your hopes for the Star Trek franchise? Is it done? Are you ready to, you know, we've got this reboot to restart things, but should we tuck this one to bed or what?
I think the franchise as a whole, I don't think you're going to see another TV series for quite some time. I would like to see it happen, but, and this is where you and I are going to be split right down the middle. I think it should go more the DS9 direction, and you're going to disagree with that. If they do come up with a new Trek series, I want a dark, serious, continuity-based series. You're going to want a fun adventure.
You know, I like the stuff that Indiana Jones was based on.
The old pulp serials.
The old pulp serials and whatnot, and I'd love to see it come back as that. But I think regardless of what either one of us wants, the one thing that I can agree with you on is it's going to be a long time before it gets the stink of Enterprise and Voyager off of it.
To me, Voyager killed it. Enterprise dug it up to kick it in the nuts one more time before killing it again. That, to me, is what those two series did to Trek. Yeah. And then J.J. Abrams tried a reanimation spell, you know, but he didn't get the dice roll quite right to resurrect it. He didn't get the resurrection spell quite right.
Which is why we ended up with something a little bit more awesome.
Possibly. Because he wasn't trying to resurrect the franchise as a whole.
Exactly.
So we're going to bow out a little early this week, and I want to say Scott will be back.
I will. I'm just.
He told me three or four episodes sitting out. I don't
maybe
know if that
six,
numbers.
12, maybe
40.
Another year. I don't know, but we'll see. I am just going to take a little bit of time off here just to get stuff in order. If you want to get in touch with me, smurray75@gmail.com. It's not a problem. I look forward to hearing to everybody. I'm also on Facebook.
Or me at lostinthestaticshow@gmail.com. So I will talk to both you out there later, and I will talk to you at some point in the future.
And I will see you for Halloween. I do want to come back for the Halloween one.
Yes.
So we'll do that. But nonetheless, thanks a lot for joining us.
Night.
Good night, everybody.